Good morning. It is a delight to be able to come and share with you this morning. I spent a little over an hour in Jim's office this week learning more about you, and he had two beautiful pictures of the sanctuary on his office wall, and it's even better in person. It's just delightful. I bring you greetings from everyone at Pacific School of Religion, from faculty and students, from my colleagues in the administration, and from our Board of Trustees. We are delighted to have the Swedenborgian House of Studies as a part of our school's ministry and life. Jim will be surprised to learn that I'm his boss. Please don't pass that on to him. He actually has a board of directors that he is directly accountable to. He's responsible to me only in terms of the academic affairs of the institution. So it's great to be here. I invite you now to open your hearts and spirits for a moment of prayer. Will you pray with me? Holy One, generator of wisdom, fountain of life and light, let your spirit rest upon each of us in this moment to open our hearts and minds, to hear a word of truth, and to see a way of life. Bless the words from my mouth, that they might be guided and inspired by your spirit and by your hope and desire for all your children. Bless each and all of us in this moment and in all of our days. In the name of the one who was and is yet to be, even Jesus Christ. Amen. Just about every week, sometimes multiple occasions within a week, there are media reports, usually citing some Pew study or some other demographic analysis of the church, a Gallup poll or some such thing, that announce statistics that prove in some way church is dying in the United States, if not everywhere. I notice that increasingly even denominational executives have picked up this language. I read in your Swedenborgian newsletter this past week, the musings of your president, I guess it's called, who was bemoaning the drop in membership within the Swedenborgian churches and wondering what will happen in the future if that trend continues. If you listen to everything that's being said about the church, everything that the media carries and the pollsters proclaim, you would in fact believe that the church is in its waning years. And if you believe that, in my judgment, you would be wrong. If your image of church is what the pollsters like to measure and the media likes to count, it would be a building overflowing with people, with budgets exceeding their goals every year, new facilities popping up as fast as you can count. Well, there isn't as much of that as there used to be. Even in South Carolina, where I live, the heart of the Bible Belt, churches like that are increasingly hard to find. There are enough of them so that those who want to find that kind of church can find it. But increasingly, that's not where church is being found. I'm reminded of a little story that I think is appropriate for those people that see church in that way. In times gone by, often religious preference was listed on job applications. And I don't know if this is an apocryphal story or not, but on one such application, under "What is your religious preference?" the applicant wrote "white brick colonial." And for those who want that kind of church, or even perhaps a church in this architectural style, there are some options out there. And there are still enough flourishing and filled congregations to give those who believe that's the way it's going to be for everybody hope. But these instances are less and less the norm. And increasingly, fewer and fewer people are trying to find churches that look like that. Rodney Stark, in his book, The Rise of Christianity, traces the early days of the Christian church, the first three centuries of its existence. And in his studies as a historian and sociologist of religion, Stark looked at the census records of the Roman Empire, which he found out to be quite extensive and quite well maintained. And in studying the census of the Roman Empire, he discovered that over time, those who claimed to be Christians increased dramatically in the first three centuries, so that by the time the Emperor Constantine declared that the empire was Christian, it had already become that. But what Stark found that was interesting is why that happened. Most of us think that it was because of the power of the message or some great charismatic leaders or all of the legacy of solid and wonderful biblical story and tradition, but Stark found something else. In those first three centuries, there were numerous plagues that had swept through the empire. And each time a plague came to a city in the Roman Empire, people would flee the city except for the sick and the Christians. And those who fled had no one to care for them, and most of them died. Those who were sick and could not flee were ministered to by the Christians who stayed. And because they survived, they joined this remarkable group of people who had no fear of death. And each time there was a plague, at the end of it, the number of Christians in the empire grew dramatically. The church grew not because of the power of its message, not because of the wonder of resurrection, not because of any of the things that we in the church today believe are critical to its life. The church grew because it lived differently than the world lived. If we look at the histories of the early church, if we look at Christian scriptures, we see a different kind of church than we imagine church to be. Some of us have collapsed the early experience of the church so that we think St. Peter actually laid the cornerstone of a basilica in Rome, or that we went right from crucifixion to having pews. All sorts of things in our imagination that keep us from seeing what church really was when it began and what it is now becoming again. That wonderful story from the Gospel of Luke, I'm sure you're all familiar with it. It's often read in churches if they have an Easter evening service, for this is the story of what happened on that first Easter evening. Some disciples fleeing the city after just a horrible weekend, although they'd heard rumors that the ending wasn't the devastating ending they thought it might have been. These disciples are still fleeing the city, returning to their home in Emmaus. They're accompanied by someone they do not recognize. And it's not until they get home and they invite this unrecognized stranger into their home to break bread together that they finally see who has been on the journey with them. You know what it must have been like for them if you've ever experienced any sense of grief, how that shroud can keep you from seeing things or feeling things. Even familiar things through that haze of grief can be unrecognizable. But somewhere in this story, maybe just getting off the road, maybe just getting home, maybe in the breaking of the bread, that shroud is lifted and they know they are in the presence of the risen Christ. I wonder if when it comes right down to it, that isn't pretty much what church is. It's coming home. It's feeding the body and the spirit. And it's being in the presence of the risen Christ. Sounds like a pretty good church to me, but as good as it is, there's still a little piece that isn't yet there. When one looks at the story in Acts, one is either marveled or angered by it. In our culture, anger is more the emotion. I mean, sharing everything? Everything? When you have a lot, sharing everything is, that's just a little too much. And this passage is often dismissed as being unrealistic or not achievable because, good Westerners that we are, we focus always on material things. But I wonder if there's something more to this story, and that something more was opened up to me in a story that the great novelist and preacher Frederick Buechner tells about a time in his life when his daughter had become ill and the illness wasn't diagnosed. If you have a child and the child has a sickness that can't be named, you know what anxiety and stress that can bring. And Buechner was at his farm in Vermont with his family and with his daughter waiting for something to happen that would name this disease and bring a cure, when out of the blue, a person that, well, it wasn't even an acquaintance, and Frederick wasn't even sure he really met this individual, someone who had attended a lecture or a sermon or something, all the way from North Carolina, drove to Vermont to be with Buechner's family in this moment of uncertainty and fear. And Buechner says this stranger, friend, he didn't know what to call him, spent the days walking through the woods around the farm with Buechner, talking about life and Buechner's daughter and faith and healing and God. And Buechner said when it was all over and his friend, now friend, left, his daughter's healing process had begun for the disease was named, he said, "I realized that what was happening was we were being like Christ to one another, giving each other everything we needed to get through the day." That's a pretty good church, too. And if you put those two stories together, the story from the Emmaus journey and the story from Acts, you get some idea of where church is increasingly being found today. Oh, it's still found in places like this and will be for generations to come, and it'll be good church. But with younger generations, church is found in different places. The church today can be found in lots of Acts-like experiences, lots of Emmaus Road journeys. The pollsters only look at churches like this. They don't ever look on the Emmaus Road. Young people like to talk about being spiritual but not religious, which, as I shared with your pastor, really should give this church a leg up with younger folks because that's at the heart of who you are. But that spirituality is connected with action, with being like Christ to one another in the world. The church, in its early days, was called to live and act like Christ to those around it. And in that acting, the church flourished and grew. The church today is finding its expression in new places where justice and social transformation are occurring and spiritual transformation is joining in the challenge. In theological education, we have a great challenge before us. How do we train leaders for churches like this? And also train leaders for that new church that's emerging that doesn't have hymnals or pews or even acknowledge specific doctrines or meet in the same place week after week, or even want to claim the name Christian at all? How do we train those people who will bring that spiritual grounding to the justice and transformational work that is occurring in so many places today? The people who are seeking church and building church in those places can be found in soup kitchens and at habitat houses and in post-prison programs and in daycare and in elderly care and in immigration reform and in education reform and in name it, on and on and on. And in those places, they are seeking their spiritual grounding and revelation. And it's not a bad church. It's just not like the church we have come to know and love. When I was a kid growing up, we used to have this wonderful song, "The church is not a building, the church is not a steeple. You open the doors and the church is the people." Increasingly today, the church is not a building, or at least not always. The church is not the place that has the rock band or the best PowerPoint during the sermons or all the other things churches are trying to add to make themselves relevant, everything but being like Christ to one another and breaking bread and welcoming people home and knowing that the holy is in their midst. At Pacific School of Religion, we are daring to find ways to empower and equip leaders for all these communities. It's a challenge, but it's a joy. This year, we've welcomed 14 Changemaker Fellows to our campus. For 1 year, they are people who come out of social transformation, social entrepreneurial work. Some of them have never been in church before. Some of them will probably never be in church again, at least not church as we know it. But they've come to us because they have a need to understand the spiritual formation and foundation that can help them be more like Christ to those with whom they live and work. It is where church can be found today, just like it can be found here. It's not good or bad. It's just where church is. Amen.